We're holding on some Achtes Amud Aleph, about halfway down the Amud, but through the third line of the wide lines. We were learning yesterday about we started learning about the Ben Sora Ramoda. We talked about that since the pasuk says Ben, then it means that he has to be not old enough to be an Ish, but he has to be close to being an Ish. And we said also that if he himself is or could be an Av, a father, then also he can't become a Ben Sora Ramoda, from which we said, therefore, so we were discussing the question, would it be possible for him to father a child even before Bar Mitzvah, such that the child is born before he reaches the stage of HaKafas HaZakan, where we said where enough hair grows in around his aver to make him that he's no longer in the category of Ben Sora Ramoda. So the last thing we said was that not necessarily. What we mean is, in other words, all we need is enough time that potentially, if he had a wife and if she was pregnant, then it would be noticeable by that point, which is 3 months into the pregnancy. So it doesn't require that the baby is actually born, is that the hypothetical baby is born before he's out of the stage of Ben Sora Ramoda, but at least that the pregnancy is noticeable at that point. So the Gemara says Gufa. So getting back to what we said before, Amar Rab Krus B'doy, Amar Rab Shabzi, Kol Yomav Shal Ben Sora Ramoda, Enin Ela Shloisha Chadashim Bilvad. So the whole period during which a boy could be a Ben Sora Ramoda is only 3 months. So the Gemara says, V'hanan T'nan, Mishi Yovish Shtei Sairus V'ad Shiyakif Zakan. The Mishnah said, from when he develops Shtei Sairus until there's enough hair there that it surrounds the Aver, and that presumably takes a lot more than 3 months. And the answer is the Mishnah is telling us it's one or the other. Hikif zokan afagav dele molu shloisha chadashim. If enough hair grows there, it grows much faster than normal, and therefore enough hair has grown, even though the 3 months have not passed yet, then he can't be a Ben Sora Ramoda. And Rabbi Krus B'doy is telling us molu shloisha chadashim afagav dele hikif. Then, in addition, you also have a hard limit of 3 months, whether hikif zaken or not, on the basis of we were saying that 3 months is enough. That if his wife were pregnant, if he had a wife, and if she were pregnant, that the pregnancy would be noticeable by that point. So it's one or the other. Krus B'doy is not contradicting the Mishnah. Rather, each of them is saying a different criterion, and in order for him to be a Ben Sora Ramoda, it has to be that neither of them, neither Hikif Zakan, nor that 3 months have passed since Shtei Sairus. The Gemara continues. Yosef Reb Nahau Yaakov Yosef Reb Yaakov Minahar Pkud Kamei de Rava. Reb Yaakov from Nahar Pkud, the name of a city in Babel, was sitting one time in front of Ravina as a Talmud. The Yosef Vekama Meshmei de Rav Huna Brei de Rav Yeshua. He was sitting and saying the following concept in the name of Rav Huna Brei de Rav Yeshua. He says, Shema Mina Midi Reb Krus B'doy, based on what Reb Krus B'doy is saying, we can derive the following point. Midi Reb Krus B'doy, Omer Reb Shabzei, we can derive Yeledes L'Shiva. Now, we have throughout Shas, we talk about the idea that a baby can develop on one of two tracks, either a 7 month track or a 9 month track. Meaning most babies develop on the 9 month track, and it takes 9 months for the baby to gestate in the womb and to be viable. But sometimes you have babies who are born after a 7 month period, and that kind of thing. Also, we have various great figures in Jewish history, such as Moshe Rabbeinu and Shmuel, who were born like that after a short pregnancy like that. There is that concept. So now, Rabbi Yaakov in the Har Pekud is pointing out we can see from this din that we just said Yeledes L'Shiva Ein Ubra Nikar L'Shlish Yameha. If a woman is to give birth after a 7 month pregnancy, the pregnancy would not be noticeable after 1/3 of the pregnancy. Meaning, in other words, we were saying before that you need 3 months for the pregnancy to be noticeable. Evidently, Rabbi Yaakov is saying that must apply whether the pregnancy is a 7 month pregnancy or a 9 month one. Either way, it still takes 3 months for it to be visible. Rather than saying that the amount of time is 1/3 of the pregnancy, we would have to say that it's always a fixed 3 months, because. If you were going to say that you could notice the pregnancy after 1/3 of it is over, Then Lomeli Gimel, then why would we say that? Why would we say that you have a 3 month window in which it could be a ben soda motor? On the face of it, according to that, it would be enough if there were 2 months and 1/3 of a month, because that would be 1/3 of 7 months. And yet, Reb Kus Vadoya is telling us that the window of time during which a boy could be a ben soda motor is not 2 1/3 months, but rather 3. So therefore, says Rabbi Yaakov, we must say on the basis of that, that no matter what, whether it's going to end up being a 7 month pregnancy or a 9 month one, either way, when the pregnancy is noticeable, is always after 3 months. And therefore, that's why we're saying you have a 3 month window of opportunity during which he's already bar mitzvah. So therefore, he already has shtei sidus. Therefore, as we talked about yesterday, he can be chayiv misa, where otherwise, as a child, he wouldn't be chayiv misa. And yet, he still can't be considered an av yet because the pregnancy would not be noticeable. Otherwise, in other words, again, the point is sometimes you have pregnancies like that that are shorter. And that are shorter, and we should say that the baby develops faster and the pregnancy is noticeable after only 2 months and 1/3. Omalay, but Ravina answers him, that's not really a solid proof. You could actually say that maybe the baby is noticeable after only 1/3 of the pregnancy is over, regardless of whether it's a 7 or a 9 month pregnancy. So yes, it will, the amount of time will vary depending on the length of the pregnancy. All it is but zil bosa ruba, but we can go according to the majority. Most pregnancies are 9 months, so therefore we don't have to be concerned about the possibility that that this particular one might end up being a 7 month pregnancy. Rashi, by the way, points out another nafkamina from this question. This question of what Rabbi Yaakov is pointing out is not just relevant as far as the ben soda remota, it's also relevant as far as the question of, for example, we say that we have all over Shas, we have the din that that a woman after her husband dies or divorces her or what have you, and she gets married, and she's supposed to wait 3 months, minimum of 3 months, before she remarries. That way, we can tell whether the baby is from her first husband or her second one. So now, if you're going to tell me. So now all we have to do is take a look. Is the pregnancy noticeable after 2 1/3 months? If so, then we know that it's a 7 month pregnancy, and then we can be sure it's from the first husband, and then we don't have a suffix. So Ravina is answering him, no, that's not really a solid proof, because you could say zil bosa ruba, you go according to the majority, and most pregnancies are 9 months, and therefore, so no, you can't really say that it could happen that it could be less than that. No, when it comes to the ben soda motor here, we're just going to say that it's always, we're always saying a flat 3 months. In fact, the Orochonea points out over here that the Gemara does point out that sometimes you also have pregnancies that are not noticeable after 1/3 of the time. So precisely for that reason, the Gemara mentions in Yevamos that sometimes we can have that kind of suffix. So the same way over here, we can say that we go according to the Ruiv, and most women give birth after 9 months. So Amrua Kamei de Rabishua de Ravhuna Bre de Rabishua. So in fact, the Yad Ramah points out it is true that if it were to be that his wife or a woman he had relations with had a noticeable pregnancy after 2 1/3 months, we couldn't judge him as a ben soda remota anymore. But on the whole, we can assume that 3 months. On the whole, we can assume that it would have been 3 months. So Amrur Kamei de Rabbi Shua to Rav Huna Brei de Rabbi Shua. They told over this discussion to Rav Huna Brei de Rabbi Shua, and he says, Omalahu, he says, wait a minute, over Dinin of Foshas mi as Linen Basar Ruba. Since when by Dinin of Foshas do we go according to a Roiv? Doesn't the Torah tell us that the Beis Din has to judge him and try to save him, as we learned earlier in the Masechta about the length that Beis Din has to go to try to find reasons to exonerate him. You're telling me we just go according to the Rove? Why? Why couldn't there be a valid argument in Beis Din? It's already 2 1/3 months have passed. There's still 20 days left to go until the third month is over. Why wouldn't it be a valid argument in Beis Din? That in fact, maybe in this case, maybe had he been maybe a hypothetical woman that he would have been with would be pregnant by now and would be noticeable after 2 1/3 months, and therefore we shouldn't judge him as a Ben Soda. How can we ignore that factor and just say, well, most of the time it's 3 months? So what do you mean? Zilba. They brought back a case to Ravina. They brought back the Rav Huna Bre de Rishu's answer to Ravina. Omale, and Ravina answers back. So over Dinah Farshas lawyers linen basa ruba. So what's the problem? You're telling me by Dinah Farshas we don't go according to Rav? But none. We learned earlier in our Masechta, Echad Oimer B'Shnayim B'Chodesh, that we said if one aide says that the thing happened on the second day of the month, the Echad Oimer B'Shloisha, and the other one says it happened on the third day, Eidus and Kayemis, their Eidus is still valid. They're contradicting each other, and we learned earlier that if they contradict each other, we throw out the Eidus. We said, Shazeya Debi, one of them knows that the previous month was 30 days long, and the other one doesn't know that. So we see that in a case, so and we accept the Eidos. Tosfos points out earlier in the Tosfos refers over here to what they discussed earlier in the Masechta on the subject when we learned that point. That one thing is we have to remember. You know, we also asked them the day of the week. We also asked them all the other details. Everything matched up with the exception of the day of the month. Therefore, we have reason to say that they're not actually contradicting each other, but just one of them has information that the other one doesn't know. Nevertheless, Tosfos says the Gemara is still asking over here that if we didn't ask that if we didn't go according to the Rove, then it would be an example of what we learned. Kivin shehigid shuvei nechozer umagid, that once an aid has said edus, we don't allow him to modify his edus in a way that's going to contradict or that's going to whatever it. So in other words, so the question is, so obviously we must be able to go according to Rove rather than saying, well, no, maybe they just didn't know. And then afterwards they're explaining that they didn't know, because if that's the case, it would be Shuvei Nechozer or Magid. It would be that they're modifying their Eidos and they can't do that. So we must say that even in Dinei Nefashos, we go according to Rove. Because most people, it's true, most people are not familiar with that early in the month, whether the previous month was 29 days or 30. So that's so Ravina says, Vi, if you were going to tell me, Reshua, we never go according to the Rove when it comes to Dinei Nefashos, Nema, then why would we accept the Raiders? Nema Hani Dafka Kamasadi. Maybe in fact each one is being precise. One is saying exactly it was on the second, and I know that for a fact. And the other one is saying I know for a fact that it was on the third. And it comes out then they're contradicting one another. And yet we don't say that. Ella lav mishum damin and zilbas aruba. Therefore, Ravina says, you see very well that when it comes to that when it comes to even to Dinei Nefashos, we do say we go according to the Rove. And it's very common that many people, maybe even most people, make a mistake as far as Ibra Chodesh and don't know whether it was a 29-day or a 30-day month. So therefore, so Ravina says there's good reason to say that we do go according to the Rove. In fact, actually, so the Gemara is going to go on with the discussion and prove that by Dinei Nefashos we do go according to the Rove. But actually, the Ran brings up a question anyway. Wait a minute. I mean, the whole concept that we follow the Rove comes from the dinim of how the Sanhedrin works. That we go according to the majority of that we go according to the majority of votes. So all it is fine. You have to have the tzilua eder. You have to have some of the dayanim have to be trying to defend him, as we learned earlier in the Masechta. If all of them start by saying he's guilty, then we let him go free. But the concept of roiv itself, we're learning from the way that a Beis Din votes. So what are you telling me? What is Rav Huna Bre de Rishu even thinking that you can't use roiv when it comes to dinei nefashos? So the answer is that so the answer is that he and you have other proofs as well. You have other proofs as well that you can go according to Rove when it comes to Dinei Nefashos. There's a Gemara, the relevant Gemara in Chulin is that one person kills another one. How do you know that the victim was not a treifa already? How do you know that he didn't have a hole in his lung in the exact same place where the other guy stabbed him, for example? And then if we knew that that were the case, he wouldn't be chayiv misa. And the Gemara, in fact, effect in the Chulin proves from that that we do follow the concept of Roiv and Halacha. So what does Rav Huna Breda Rishuas have, Amina, to think that we shouldn't? So the distinction the Ran points out, and actually Tosfos points out similarly at the beginning of our Masechta, that in Halacha we have two different types of Roiv. I think we've discussed this before. You have what's called Ruba de Issei Kamon, which is a Roiv that's in front of us. We have in front of us X number of Dayonim, for example, and some of them are voting this way and some of them are voting that way. Or you have, for example, let's say you have one piece of Terefa meat gets mixed up with a few pieces of Kosher meat, and then you have, it's Ruba de Issei Kamon, we have the Roiv in front of us right now, and the Roiv is kosher. Then you have Ruba de Lesser Kamon, which means we don't have the Roiv in front of us, it's more of a statistical Roiv. Statistically, most women give birth after 9 months, and the pregnancy is noticeable after three. Statistically, other examples like that. So that kind of, here, what Rav Huna Breda Rishuas is asking is that how can we use Ruba de Lesser Kamon, which is a weaker type of Roiv, how can we use that when it comes to Dini Nefashis? Sure, Ruba de Issei Kamon, such as we have X number of Dayonim in front of us and they're voting one way or the other, of course the Torah is making it clear that we can use that. But how do we know that we can also use Ruba de Lesser Kamon, a statistical Roiv, to say, for example, well, most women give birth after 9 months, and therefore that's reason enough for us to say that in this case also we can judge him as a ben sora remoto for 3 months. How can we do that? So again, Ravina was pointing out that when it comes to the two Edim, it's a Ruba de Lesser Kamon, because we don't know, we haven't gone and interviewed everybody to find out how many of them know about that it was a 30-day month or not. It's a Ruba de Lesser Kamon, it's a statistical Roiv, and we see therefore that we can use that. So now the Gemara continues, Omer of Yumi Yumidifti Afanan Nami Tanena. Rav Yumi Yumidifti says, in fact, we have another Mishnah that's relevant to this, a Mishnah in Nida, which we also learned about earlier in our Masechta. Vas Sholosh Shonim V'yem Echad, a girl, once she's 3 years old and one day, meaning full 3 years old, Miskadeshes B'Bia, she's able to be Mekodesh with her father's permission with Bia. You know, we know you have Kesef Shtar and Bia. Below three, it's not considered bia, but from 3 years old and on, it is such a thing is possible. It does have validity in halacha, and therefore the kedushin has been accomplished. The baalei yavam kna, and similarly, if she had been when she was still a katana, she became her husband died and yibum was needed. If her yavam has relations with her at that point, then yibum has been accomplished, and now therefore she's fully his wife insofar as he would need to give her a get. So that applies as well. And if anybody were to be mizana with her, then he would be chayev, and he would be chayev for an eshes ish. She would be potter on the grounds that she's a ktana, but the boil would be chayev because she is an eshes ish. So now the Yad Ramah points out she won't have the din of a Naira B'sula, for example, because she's already a Nesua, but nevertheless the dinim of Eishas Ish still apply, and there would be Chenek involved over here. Tosfos actually earlier in the Masechta when we first learned this piece, Tosfos had discussed over there, given that we're saying that her father can accept kedushin and Bia works and Yibum works and all of that, why do we even need to mention the point that Chayev Aleihem Mishum Eishes Ish? So Tosfos discusses a number of possibilities, one of them being you shouldn't think that maybe it means that he was only koiner her midrabbanon, like if a cotton did yibum, and therefore we need to say that it's daraisa. Another point is also that here we're dealing with the matter of Roiv. The point is, even though there is the possibility that when she grows up, it's going to turn out that she's an Ilonis, a woman who's infertile, and at 3 years old, we can't know that yet. Nevertheless, we still assume that it was a valid kedushin, and that we're not going to say that it may have been kedushay tos. So somebody was mezana with her. We're able to execute him on that basis, even though there is the possibility, and again, it's a ruba de lesser kamon, because we don't know yet what it's going to be with her. She may turn out years later that she is an ilonis. Nevertheless, we don't take that into consideration. The Mishnah continues. Umatama as Boyala, if somebody has relations with her when she's a nidah, then the man who had relations with her becomes tame, Mishkav Tacht and Ke'elyon, to the extent where something that we're a lower mattress, for example, if you have a pile of mattresses that he lies on, then the ones below, the ones that are not, that he's not lying directly on, the ones that are stacked underneath it, become tame as a Rishon LeTumah, to the extent of Ke'elyon, like something above a Zav, as we learned back when we learned on Nun Hey Amud Beis, when we learned this Mishnah and discussed it. A Zav sleeps even on a stack of mattresses, all of them are going to be a Rishon LeTumah. Here, a boil nidah becomes tameh, but not to the extent of the nidah herself, but rather a lesser degree of tumah, based on, we learn it from the way the Torah phrases it in Parshas Metzora, that he is tameh, but only to the extent that the actual direct mattress that he lies on will become tumas midras and will be an avat tumah. But anything else below that will be only a rishon tumah. And that's the same way as when you have a zav is lying on a bed, for example, and you have, let's say, a shelf above him. The things on that shelf are going to become a Rishon LeTumah. It's called Tumas Madaf. So the same way over here. In other words, to saying that the Tamei Mishkav Tacht and Ke'elyon is a shorthand way of saying that all the other mattresses in the pile below the one that he's lying on directly are going to become a Rishon LeTumah. Again, the point being, in other words, if she was less than 3 years old, then it wouldn't be considered bia in halacha, and therefore it wouldn't be he wouldn't become he wouldn't have the special din of boil nida. He would just have more the din of a man who touches a woman who's nida. It is possible for a girl to become nida even far below the age of bas mitzvah. The Mishnah mentions in Masechta Nida that even if she has bleeding, even if she has uterine bleeding on the very first day she was born, she can become a nida already. So a nida, it's possible for her to be with occasional with a one-off bleeding like that, or whatever, but nevertheless, if she's below three, then him being boil her is not considered a boil nidah, whereas if she's above three, then if she's above three, then it is. And the Mishnah continues, Nisus LaKoyan, if she was a daughter, if she was a Bas Yisrael married to a Koyan, Toichal B'Truma, then she's able to eat Truma as the wife of a Koyan. Midaraisa, even after Erusin, Midarabanan, only after Nisuin. And if one of the people who passels her, such as a mamzer or a goy or an eved or whatever, has relations with her, cholol would be another example, psolim in akona, then he passels her from ever marrying a koyin, because now she's a cholola. He also passels her from eating truma ever again. And if any one of the arayas listed in the Torah has relations with her, which includes not only when she's an Eishes Ish, we can talk about also when she's a single girl and one of her relatives has relations with her. So then Mumosin Aleha, they would get executed for having relations with her, because again, after three, it is considered Bia already. V'hiptura, she's Potter because she's a Ktana. The point is, in other words, so that thus far the Mishnah. So now, says Rabbi Yirmiyah Midifti, Ba'amai. Now, why would we say that anybody could be executed for having relations with her as an Eishes Ish? Let's focus on the part of the Mishnah that said that if she's an Eishes Ish, then it's a full-fledged marriage. Why? Ema Ilonisi. It could turn out in the end that she's an Ilonis. She's a woman who never physically, whose body never physically matures. And it would turn out it was kedusha tos va'adaita dehochi lekadosh, and we would say her husband never would have been mekadosh her if he had known that this is going to happen, and therefore it would come out that's kedusha tos, and therefore retroactively we would say there's no kedushin. So how can we say now that we should go and that we should go and execute somebody for being mezana with her, where it might be that she wasn't an eishes ish after all? So Elalav, so Elalav Damin and Zilbos Aruba. So it must be because we go according to the Roiv. The Roiv Noshim Lam Ilonis Ninu. And most women do not turn out to be Ilonis. So therefore, that shows that we can go according to a Roiv. And again, we're talking about even Ruba de Lesse Kamon, because we're not talking about that we're not talking about we actually check this girl and know for a fact that she's going to turn out not to be an Ilonis. We have no way of knowing that. We're talking about a statistical Roiv. And yet we see that that's good enough by Din and Nefashis. So the Gemara says, no, that's not really a solid proof. Loi, my chayev aleha dekatani korban. Because you could say, when we say somebody is chayev for her, doesn't mean he's chayev misa, would mean that he's chayev a korban. Beshoigig. So Beshoigig, when it comes to a korban, then we can go according to the roiv. But to say that we should execute because of a roiv, that said, as Rav Huna Breda Beshua said before, maybe we can't do that. The Gemara says, what do you mean? V'homu What do you mean? The Mishnah had said that they can be executed because of her, which means, in other words, we're talking about she's a full-fledged Eishes Ish. And the answer is Avihah, because it means that part of the Mishnah means that it's her father or some other close relative had relations with her. So then it has nothing to do with her being an Eishes Ish or not. Just by virtue of the fact that she's his daughter, then already he's Chayim Misa. So that's what we're talking about there. It doesn't matter, Roiv or not Roiv, because it's not a matter of Eishes Ish, there it's a matter of Arayas. By the way, that Gemara in Cholin actually does mention the point that we do, the point the Gemara mentions over there, the point that we can also follow Chazakah when it comes to Dinei Nefashos. And there we have an example of that as the Chazakah that he really is her father. After all, how can you know 100% for sure that a certain man is a certain other person's father? Maybe conceivably, the mother, sure, because there can be people present over there, the midwife and whoever, when she gives birth, the father, you don't really have a way to do that. But and yet Chazakah tells us that we could. The Gemara points out over there, we see that, for example, in last week's parasha, a person can be executed by Beis Din for cursing or hitting his parents, even though when it comes to his father, you could never know 100% for sure that he really is his father. Nevertheless, Chazakah allows us to say that he is. The same way over here, we would say the Chazakah is strong enough to say that he really is her father, and therefore that he can be executed for committing znus with her. What is still the Gemara says, but the Mishnah had used the expression that if any one of the Arayas had relations with her. Now that implies, in other words, Arayas that come as a result of marriage. So for example, yeah, her father, her brother, that's independent of marriage. But let's say, for example, it also seems to include, for example, her father-in-law or her husband's son from a different wife, her stepson, all those kinds of things. They'll also be chayav misa, and those are as a result of the marriage. So that shows, in other words, we have to consider that the marriage is most likely valid. Aye, she could turn out to be an ilonis. Well, there you go. It shows that we can use a roiv. The Gemara says, fine, Ella hocha mayaskinen dekabla ilave. No, because fine, what we can be talking about is the husband says to begin with, I'm willing to accept that I'm Mekadosh her, whether it turns out that she's an Ilonis or not. In a regular case, a man would say, you know what, if I had known that she's going to turn out to be an Ilonis, then I wouldn't have married her. But you can have a case where he says, you know what, it doesn't matter either way, I'm glad I married her. And therefore, so now, even if it turns out years later that she is in fact an Ilonis, then the kiddushin are still valid, because then it's obviously not kiddushin tos. So therefore, so we can shell ayin the Mishnah that way. We can say that the Mishnah is talking about that kind of case. So therefore, it doesn't necessarily have to result. We don't necessarily require roiv in order for that Mishnah to work. Even if we went like Rav Huna Breda Rishua, we could still say that you don't use roiv when it comes to dinin nefashos, and yet that Mishnah could still work, because we could be talking about that no roiv is necessary in that case. Fine. Okay, so the Gemara continues in this connection. So now let's get back to this point. Okay, so this was all an outgrowth of this question about that we said that the Ben Sora Murda has there's only a 3 month window during which he can be a Ben Sora Murda, because 3 months is enough time for a pregnancy to be noticeable, and then that led us into this whole discussion. But now, previously we were discussing the question whether a boy below bar mitzvah age, below Shtei Seiros, is actually even able to father a child. We said, we started learning on some Chesamud Beis that Rav Chista had said that yes, it is possible. However, then if that happens, then he wouldn't be able to ever become a Ben Sora Murda, because at that point he's an Av. On the other hand, we had Rabbah saying that no, that it's impossible in the first place for a child to ever father a child. So now let's talk more about that point. Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Isha Hamasalela, no, Isha doesn't say Isha in the Mishnah. Hamasalelas bivna katan. If a woman is rubbing against her little son, now she says Hamasalelas is Loshen Pritzus. So she's having physical contact with him, and like they're, so to speak, in a playing around way. The Haraba. Now, what happens if he then does Hara, where some of his Aver touches, where his Aver touches or goes into hers? Earlier in the Masechta, we talked about two different definitions in halacha of hara. There's different opinions whether it means the initial contact of his aver with hers, or whether it means the aftara, the end of the tip of the aver going in. Whatever the case, they're kind of playing around and acting in a pritzistic way, and hara was done. What does that do as far as her fitness to marry a kohen? Now, if her son was a gadol, there's no question. Obviously, that would be she'd now be a zoina, and she's also to marry a kohen. But here, her son was a katan. B'shama says that is reason enough to passel her from marrying a kohen, or if she doesn't have children from a, if she does if she doesn't have living descendants to be able to go back to eat from truma from her father's house, all of this would make her passel for it. So there's no chiyuv misa, Rashi points out, because there was no hasra. They were just playing around. But nevertheless, Beis Shammai says that would be enough to make her be considered a zoina, and now therefore she's possible to marry a kohen, and she's possible to ever eat truma. Or Beis Hillel Machshirin, Beis Hillel says that she'd still be kosher because the child's a katan, and therefore his bia is not considered a bia. So the Gemara points out, Rab Chia, the son of Rabba Bar Nachmeni, by the way, is regular Rabba in Shas. So here we have his son. So here we have, he had a son named Rab Chia. So he says in the name of Rav Chista, others say that Rav Chista himself said in the name of Ze'iri the following point: Hakol Moedim Ben Teisha Shanim Yem Echad. Everybody would agree that if the boy in this scenario was 9 years old or older, should be ase bia, that his bia would be a bia, even to the extent, in other words, that if there was hasra, the mother would actually be chayav misa. And there's no question, therefore, that either way, hasra or not, even b'shoigig, she would be considered now a zoina, and she would be also to marry a kohen. Pachas min ben shmoina. On the other hand, if the boy was less than 8 years old, Then says Rav Chia or Rav Chista, that everybody would agree that it's not considered a bia. Lo nechlaku elav ben shmoina. The machlokas is when he's 8 years old. So he's already reached his eighth birthday, but he's not yet 9 years old. Beis Shammai samri gamrinen midoros harishonim. Beis Shammai says we can derive from what happened in earlier generations, whereas the Gemara is going to go on to explain over here. In earlier generations, boys were able to father children even when they were 8 years old. So Beis Shammai derives from that even for later periods, that it is possible that therefore an 8 year old's bia is already considered to be a bia. Or Basil Savri, Loigamrin, Midoros HaRishonim. Basil says we don't learn from the earlier generations, and therefore, so fine, in those generations they were able to do that, but nowadays it's impossible, and therefore Basil says until he's nine, it's not even considered a bia. Now the Ran points out, wait a minute, I mean, how is Beis Shammai even thinking to learn from Doros HaRishonim? We see that not only they were able to have bia, but they were actually able to father children, whereas we see in later generations, and in nowadays, a boy has to be much older than that, has to be 13 in order to father children, which is why we said before that Rabba had said that it's impossible even for a katan to father a child. So what is Beis Shammai thinking to even learn to learn from Doros HaRishonim, where obviously they were very different? So he says, nevertheless, look, we do see that even in the later generations, 9 years old is already considered a bia, that they can't father children yet, but nevertheless, it is considered a bia. So therefore, Beis Shammai says that you can learn from Doros HaRishonim and from the earlier generations and say that at least you can learn from them. Fine, you can't learn from them that a boy of that age can father a child, but at least that his bia should be considered a bia, that you can learn. Beis Shammai says you can't even do that. Well, the Doros HaRishonim and Nolan Do'olid. Well, where do we see exactly that in earlier generations they were able to father children at the age of 8? Ilema, are you going to say we work it out as follows? Midichtiv, so let's go through the family tree of, let's go through the, let's start with Bathsheba. David says when he finds out, when he first hears about Bathsheba, Halo is this Bathsheba Bas Eliam Eshes Uriachiti. This is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriachiti. So we see from that Bathsheba's father was named Eliam. Who is Eliam? Uchtiv ve'Eliam ben Achitofel. In the list of David's Giborim, you have at the end of Shmuel Beis, and at the end, and in Devar and Divrei Yomim Aleph, you have a list of the Giborim, the elite unit in David's army. And in both places, it mentions someone named Eliam, the son of Achitophel HaGiloni. Achitophel was the famous, the infamous Achitophel, the advisor of David, who afterwards went over to Avshalom's side, as we're going to discuss here in the Gemara. So the Gemara is assuming that it's the same Eliam. So therefore, it comes out that Bathsheba is a granddaughter of Achitophel. In fact, later on in the Masechta, in Perek Chelek, the Gemara explains that's one reason why Achitophel joined the revolt against David. He had a premonition that the future kings of the Jewish people are going to descend from him. So he figured that he's going to be able to worm his way into the kingship. He didn't realize that the fact is that his granddaughter Bathsheba, that her son, therefore his great grandson Shlomo, is going to be the king, and all the future generations are going to come from him. Some Mefarshim also point out that may also be why he had it in for David, because the way that David took Bathsheba as a wife, the whole affair over there involving Uriah and involving all of the seeming illegality of it or whatever, so Achitophel held that against David. Why'd you put my granddaughter through such a thing? Anyway, the point is, so far we see that Bathsheba is the granddaughter of Achitophel. Now, let's work out what happened in the what happened during those years. Uchtiv, the pasuk says that so David marries Bathsheba. Their first baby, the pasuk says, died. That was part of David's punishment. Then she has another baby, which is Shlomo. V'chsiv vayishlach biyad Nosan Anovi. Hashem sent a message through Nosan Anovi. Vayikra Shmo Yedidya, and he named him Yedidya. So he has a name Shlomo, but he also has a secondary name Yedidya. Because Hashem loved him. The actual Lashon HaPasuk is without the ki and the aheve, which is why they're in parenthesis. The actual word in the pasuk is ki bavur Hashem, because of Hashem. Fine. So we see therefore that Shlomo is. So we see that Shlomo is Achitophel's great grandson. Now let's work out what happened in those years. Uchtiv. Now you have the story in Shmuel Beis. So after the whole affair with Bathsheba, the next thing that Hashem sends through Nosan Anovi to begin with, after David had taken Bathsheba and seen to it that Uriah was killed in battle. So Nosan Anovi comes with a very harsh nevuah against David, how he could make a chilul Hashem like that. And among other things, he tells him that there's going to be several things, several troubles and disasters that are going to happen in your family as a result of this. The first one was the story in Shmuel Beis, Perek Yud Gimel, about how Amnon rapes Tamar. We touched on it earlier in the Masechta. So now the pasuk says, "Vayhi l'shnasayim yomim." 2 years later, Vayil goes to Avshalom. Avshalom had people shearing his sheep, and he was making a party. And at that party is when he killed Amnon for what he had done to Tamar. So in other words, so far we have at least 2 years. So far we're up to at least 2 years since David had first married Bathsheba. Next, after that, after Avshalom had killed Amnon, he runs away to Geshur, which is where actually his mother was originally from there. Earlier in the Masechta, we talked about that his mother, Macha, was actually a Yifas Toyah. She was a princess, the daughter of the king of Geshur, whom David had captured in battle, and she was a Yifas Toyah, and her children were Tamar and Avshalom. So now Avshalom ran away to his maternal grandfather to Geshur, Vayisham Sholosh Shanim. He was there for 3 years. So far we're up to 5 years. Eventually Avshalom is brought back to Yerushalayim. It's a whole story over there in Sefer Shmuel. David didn't want to bring him back. Yoav sends someone to convince David, and the whole long story over there. Anyway, because eventually David is reconciled. Fine, let Avshalom come back to Yerushalayim, but I don't want to see him. So the pasuk says that that he was in Yerushalayim for 2 years. He was living in Yerushalayim for 2 years. And all that time he wasn't seeing the face of the king. So far we're up to 7 years since the affair of Bathsheba. After that, the pasuk describes Avshalom forces Yoav to bring him to David and reconcile with him. But then shortly after that is when Avshalom began his revolt. The Pasuk says that it happened at the end of 40 years, Vayomer Avshalom El HaMelech, what's the 40 years? Elsewhere, the Gemara explains, it means 40 years since the Jewish people had first asked for a king. They first asked for a king, and then you had, it took time until Shaul was appointed, and then Shaul was king for two and a half years, and then he was killed in battle, and then David's reign began. So we're talking at this point, we're like 36 or 37 years into David's reign. So that's what the pasuk means when it says 40 years. It doesn't mean 40, the 40th year of David. It means 40 years since they had first asked for a king. Anyway, the point is, so then Avshalom begins his revolt. Vayomer Avshalom al HaMelech, Avshalom says to the king, El chana v'ashalma es nidri asher nedarti l'Hashem b'chevren. Let me go and pay my neder. It says in the actual pasuk, I'll pay the neder that I made to Hashem in Chevron. Keep in mind, this is before the first Beis HaMikdash was built. Bomo is so allowed. So he's allowed to bring a korban anywhere in Eretz Yisrael he wants. So he claims that he wants to go to Chevron to bring a korban over there, that he had made a promise to bring a korban to Hashem. The Gemara elsewhere explains that even he didn't actually, first of all, obviously the reason he was going to Chevron is to begin there was a revolt over there, rather than he can't very well begin it in Yerushalayim under the king's nose. But in addition, the Gemara also points out that why wasn't David suspicious? Why is he going to Chevron? Because in Chevron they had the best sheep available, the best quality lambs came from Chevron, or the best quality lambs came from Chevron, and therefore it seemed like a reasonable excuse that he's going to Chevron there to get those lambs, and then he's going to bring a korban there. And that's when he began his revolt. Uchtiv. Now, later on in the revolt, so you have Achitofel joins Avshalom's side, and later on he realizes as things are developing that the revolt is going to fail. So the pasuk describes over there, he gave Avshalom advice how to send a strike force to quickly eliminate David. Meanwhile, there was another guy, Hushai Ho'arki, who was secretly a friend of David and acting as a secret agent over there, and he convinces Avshalom not to do that and instead to gather the whole army to fight against David. And Achitofel realizes that this whole thing is too unwieldy and it's definitely not going to work. So the pasuk says, Achitofel saw that what he advised did not happen, was not done. So he realizes that the whole revolt is going to fail, and then he is going to be judged as a murdered b'malchus. So he saddled up his donkey. He got up and went to his house, to his city. He gave final instructions to his family. And he strangled himself. In Bava Basra, we learned a few months ago, we learned about the instructions that he gave his family before he passed away. He told them, don't get involved in Machloikas. Don't fight against, don't rebel against Malchus Beis David. And if it's clear weather on Shavuos, then plant wheat. We talked about over there an explanation that ever gives the deeper meaning of the three instructions that he's saying. Anyway, the point is that so at that point, Achitofel is dead. Now, so this is based on the numbers that we gave before. It comes out that Shlomo was 7 years old at the time, because again, you have Shlomo is born, then you have. Shortly after that is the whole thing with Amnon and Tamar. 2 years after that, Amnon is killed. So Amnon is killed when Shlomo is 2 years old. Then Avshalom is away in Geshur for 3 years till Shlomo is five. Then you have 2 years that he's in Yerushalayim until David is at least on the surface willing to reconcile with him. So that brings us up to seven. And Avshalom's revolt, the whole thing only lasted a few months. So therefore, so Shlomo is seven at the time when this happens. When his great-grandfather, Achitofel, dies, he's 7 years old. Now, how old was Achitofel at that time? Uchtiv, the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Anshei domu mirma lo yechzu yemeihem. Men of blood and of dishonesty will not live out even half their years. Now, a regular person, lo yemei shnei seinu, as it says in Tehillim, a regular person's lifespan is expected to be 70 years. So lo yechzu yemeihem would mean that these Rishoyim don't even live to half that age, to 35. Vatanya, and we learn in a brisa, who is David referring to? He's referring to Doeg and Achitofel, his infamous enemies. Kol shnoisav shal Doeg einan ela shloshim ba'arba. The whole length that Doeg lived was only 34 years. Achitofel and another Shloshim Mishalish. Achitofel lived to be only 33. Now, why is that? Why do we deduct from him another year? Why do we say he didn't live to be 34 as well? The Yad Ramah points out because the Pasuk is saying that he committed suicide, so therefore obviously he didn't live as much as he was supposed to. So therefore we can assume had he not done that, he would have lived another year. He would have lived to 34. Like this, he died at 33. So in short, so far what we have is, based on the figures, we're saying Achitofel died at age 33 and his great-grandson Shlomo was 7. So, Kama Havilahu Tlosin Tlos. So we're saying Achitofel lived to be 33. Dal Sheva Dava Shlomo, subtract at this point, Shlomo is 7 years old. Poshlu Estrim Vashis. At this point, you have 26 years left. Dal Tautishni Latlosa Iburi. Now you have to deduct. It takes time for a pregnancy. So the three pregnancies that we're dealing with, that Achitofel's wife would give birth to, would become pregnant with and give birth to Eliam, and Eliam to Bathsheba, and Eliam's wife to Bathsheba, and Bathsheba to Shlomo. So you have three pregnancies over there, and altogether you have to allow 2 years for those things, because a baby can't be born at the very least, we're going to have, as we talked about on Amud Aleph, you can have a 7-month pregnancy, but you also need 1 month for days of Nida and Tara. So therefore, say the minimum that you're going to be able to have is the minimum that you're going to be able to have is then you have to add another 2 years. So that's that's Rashi points out then that you need the three pregnancies need to altogether span 2 years. Tosfos actually is a little bothered by that, because at least in some of the cases that the Gemara is going to learn over here, when we're talking about Achitofel and Eliam and that whole family tree over there, we're talking about different women over there. So why do we so even if you need a month for nidus and for becoming tahor, so what? I mean, you could still have, it's not exactly 8 months, it's 8 months and it's eight years and 1 month. So fine, Tosfos says we're not being particular on 1 month, but in any case, I mean, the Oruch HaNer and other and Yad David and Mefoshim point out that really you don't need a full month for all, you need 7 days that she's tameh after the birth, and even the Gemara is going to try to bring other examples over here from generations before Matan Torah, where they didn't even have the dinim of nidus yet. So the Aruch HaNer explains, in other words, that it's not so much because the woman is aser, but because there's only certain times during the month when a woman is able to become pregnant, and that's what Rashi means over here as well. And hypothetically, the earliest could be 7 months, but in addition, you really have to add another month, because statistically, you're going to have that. It's going to not necessarily are they all getting married and having relations directly at the time when she's fertile. It might be that they have to wait a couple of weeks for her to be during her fertile period of the month. That's the Oruch HaNer explains that, and in is the gist of his explanation. Okay, so anyway, so we have, if we deduct 2 years to cover the three pregnancies, so we're left with 24 years. So it comes out that each of the men in this, it comes out that each of the people in this chain fathered a child when they were 8. So in other words, Achitofel would have fathered Eliam. Eliam would have been conceived when Achitofel is 8 and born when a few months later when Achitofel is 9. The same thing Eliam to Bathsheba, and the same thing Bathsheba to Shlomo. So each one, in other words, it comes out became pre each one the conception happened when they were 8. But the Gemara, so therefore, so that could be again where Beis Shammai is learning that an 8-year-old's bia is already considered bia. But the Gemara says, Mimai, who says that that's the correct explanation? Maybe the two men, here we have two men and one woman involved over here. We have Achitofel Eliam, and then we have Bathsheba. So maybe the men are fathering the children only when they're 9, or Bathsheba Elidah Bathshis. Maybe Bathsheba, on the other hand, could mother, could become pregnant with Shlomo when she's only 6, because you could say Mishum de Itzabaria, because a woman is healthier and she has a greater capacity for having children. There's in fact a relevant Gemara in Nida about this, where there's a Goyish princess, the daughter of one of the Roman emperors, who asks Rebbe, and Rebbe explains to her the halachas that we're talking about over here, that 3 already bia is considered bia, and she says, you know, it's a pity. I first got married at 6 and I had my first baby at 7. It's a pity, based on what you're telling me, I wasted a couple of years. The Gemara says there maybe she wasn't telling the truth. Maybe a woman is not able to actually give birth at such a young age. But still, the Gemara is saying over here, maybe hypothetically, maybe we could say there is a difference in that regard between men and women. In particular, Ben Yehoyada points out that after all, the Zera goes into the woman. So therefore, maybe she has a greater capacity for it to develop inside her body more than it does for a man. So that doesn't necessarily prove that, in fact, Achitofel fathered Eliam and Eliam Bathsheba at age 8. Maybe, in fact, it was 9. So again, where is Beis Shammai's proof? Teda. In fact, you can prove that Batsheva evidently is stronger than that. Dar Havila, Vlad Meikra. After all, you have in the Psukim over there, first she and David have a baby together, and Nosan Hanavi tells David that part of your punishment for having taken Batsheva in the seemingly improper way is that that baby is going to die. And in fact, the pasuk goes on to describe that it did, that's exactly what happened. Then she became pregnant again, and then she had a son, Shlomo. So we see, even if we use the same calculation as we did before, it comes out that she was able to become pregnant at a younger age than we're talking about before. So therefore, yes, you could very well say that maybe even she's able, even younger than the men in her family, and therefore that the men themselves were nine. So no solid proof from there. Fine, the Gemara says, okay, Ela Mehocha. Fine, let's try to prove from the following. The end of Parshas Noach. Ela Tolas Terach. The following are the descendants of Terach. Terach Holdes Avromes Nochares Haran. Now, the Gemara at this point is assuming that these brothers are listed in order. So Avram is older than Nochar, who in turn is older than Haran. Now, so therefore, Avram Godom mi Nachor Shana, v'Nachor Godom mechoron Shana. So Avram, we're going to assume, was a year older than Nachor, and Nachor was a year older than Haran. Again, because it takes time for the pregnancies and things in between. Fine, it doesn't mean doesn't necessarily mean a year, but at least the point is that he was older. That he was older. Nimtz Avram Godom shtei Shana mechoron. So it comes out that Avram is 2 years older than Haran. Now, Avram and Nachor married wives, and it says over there that Avram's wife was Sarai, and the pasuk goes on to say that that she was the daughter that the that that the that Milcah and Sarai, the two sisters, were the daughters of Haran, who was the father of Milcah and of Milcah and Yiscah. The Lashon HaPasuk is that. And the Shem Eshes Avram Sarai, the Shem Eshes Nachor Milcah, Bas Haran. Milcah is the daughter of Haran. Avi Milcah, Avi Yiscah, who was the father of Milcah and Yiscah. Now, who was Yiscah? The Amr of Yitzchak, Yiscah zu Sarah. That Yiscah is another name for Sarah. V'lama nikra shma Yiscah, shesoicha beruach hakodesh, because she was able to see and gaze with ruach hakodesh. She had nevuah. She was one of the seven nevuahs. Behind her, Steve, Kola Shatomer Elacha Sarah, Shema B'Kola, as we find that Hashem says to Avraham, everything that Sarah tells you, listen to her voice. So we see that she was a greater nevuah than he was a Navi. In fact, the point is, because the expression Marsha points out, the diuk is from the word B'Kola, in her voice, which implies, in other words, the voice of nevuah, that she's saying, then you should listen to it. Marsha discusses as a taka why are we saying over here a year apart when before by Achitofel and company we were saying that all you need is 8 months apart. So Marsha explains, in other words, because that so why taka do we need that long? Why don't we say that it's only why don't we say it's only 7 or 8 months like we said before? But fine, the point is the Gemara doesn't assume that that in these Doras that are shown him there were always the the Gemara is not going into such a level of diuk to say that to say 8 months versus a year. The point is, in other words, that we want to establish the basic point that Avraham is a couple of years older than Haran, and therefore that affects the time that we could be talking about when they had their children. To get into the level of detail, 8 months, 7 or 8 months for the pregnancy versus a year, the Gemara is not getting into that level of detail. Anyway. So she's called Yiscah Shesecha Baruch Kodesh. Another reason Sarah is called Yiscah. Everybody was gazing at her beauty because, as we know from the Psukim, she was very beautiful, and the Gemara tells us she was one of the most beautiful women who ever lived. Anyway, the point is that Sarah is the daughter of Haran. Now, by the way, we learned earlier in the Masechta that Avraham says about Sarah, he says that she's my sister from my father's side, but not from my mother's side, which according to this means she's not actually his sister, she's his niece. But sometimes a person will call his nephews and nieces, he'll call them his brother and sister, like you skip a generation, kind of. Anyway, so Sarah is the daughter of Haran. Now, how much younger was she than Avraham? When Avraham is told by Hashem that he's going to have a son, Yitzchak, he falls on his face and he laughed. And he says to himself, how is it possible that a 100-year-old man and a 90-year-old woman are going to be able to have a child? So we see that Avraham was 10 years older than Sarah. Hamakoshish Avraham Yisara Esa Shnin. So we see that he was 10 years older than her. V'koshish Ma'avua Tartin Shnin. Now we see, on the other hand, he was 2 years older than her father, because we're saying that Haran was 2 years younger than Avraham. Ishtakach ki olda Haran l'sara b'tamni olda. Olida. So it comes out that he fathered her at age 8. So that would be, but Shammai is proof about the Dura Sirishonim being able to father children at age 8. But the Gemara says, Mimai, who says that that's a valid proof? Dilma Avraham Zuta Dachua Haba. Maybe Avraham was in fact the youngest of the brothers. The Derech Chochmas and Kachosh of Lehu. Maybe the Torah is not listing them in age order. Maybe it's listing them in order of their Chochma. That, in fact, Rashi on the Pasuk there brings from the Medrash that Avraham was not necessarily the oldest, but he's mentioned first because he was born circumcised, and because the Jewish people descend from him, and so on and so forth. So therefore, he's mentioned first, not necessarily to say that he was actually older than Haran. Tedan, you can prove that to Kachoshel Kra Derech Chachmasen. Here is a proof from a different group of sons of the same father, where the Torah lists them in the order of their chachma rather than the order of their age. Dichtiv vayhi Noach ben chamesh meis shana. The pasuk says that Noach was 500 years old. Vayolad Noach shem eschom ves yofes. Now, if you're going to say that it's an age order, meaning Shem Godo Mecham Shana, Mecham Godo Meyefes Shana, if you're going to say then that Shem was in fact born first, and then Chom, and then Yefes, and you're going to say that that's the age order, the problem with that is Nimtza Shem Godo Meyefes Shtei Shanim, it comes out then that Shem is 2 years older than Yefes. Uchtiv V'noyach Ben Shesh Meyes Shana V'amabal HaYamayim Al Aretz. Now the Mabel started when Noach is 600 years old. Uchtiv, but the pasuk says Eila Tolus Shem. Shem ben Maas Shana Vayelus Apachshad. Shem was 100 years old when he fathered Apachshad. Shnasayim Achar Amabel. 2 years after the Mabel. Meaning, so what do you mean? If you're going to say that he was the oldest son and he was born when Noach was 500, then at the time of the Mabel, Shem would already be 100 years old. And by the time it comes to Apachshad being born 2 years later, he'd be 102. So Ben Meir Shnona by Meir Vatartin Shnin Haba, and according to that calculation, he would have been 102 years old. Ela der Chochmas and Kachosh of Lahu. Obviously, the answer is they're being listed according to their Chochma. So therefore, they're being listed according to their Chochma. So therefore, Shem is listed first because he was the greatest Chocham out of all of them. So the same way, the same way with Avraham and his brothers, doesn't mean that Avraham was older than Haran by 2 years. It means that he's the greatest chacham among them, and therefore he's listed first. So you don't really have any proof from there that in fact that Haran fathered Sarah when he was 8 years old. He might have been much older than Avraham. Okay. So the Gemara says, Omer Rav Kahana, Amrita l'shmaita kamed Rav Zvid min ha'hoda. So Rav Kahana says, I told over this whole discussion to the Zvid min ha'hodah, this whole discussion about who was older. Amali, so the Zvid says, by the way, atun mehocha masnisu, you know, you're learning based on that logic. Tosfos, by the way, wonders if they mentioned Derech Chochmasan, then Chom should be listed last. It should be listed Shem Yefes Chom, because on the face of it, Yefes was a greater Chocham than Chom. So Tosfos leaves the question open. Maybe, in fact, Chom was Taka a Chocham, but he was a Chocham for bad. I don't know. In any case, so it was Vidmin, how Job points out, Atun Mehocham Asnisu. So you're learning that Shem was not the eldest son from that logic, that otherwise he would have been 102 when he had Arpachshad, and the Pasuk says he was only 100. We, in our Beis Medrash, we learn that from a different source. The Pasuk says, later on, when it lists the descendants of each of the sons, Shem, Chom, and Yefes, Ola Shem, Yulad, Gamhu, to Shem also children were born, Avi, Kol, Bnei, Aver, Shem being the father of all the sons of Aver, meaning all the people who live on the other side of the river, Achi, Yefes, HaGadol, the elder, they're the brother of Yefes, the elder one. Meaning Yefes Agodo Shabachim Haya. So therefore we see from that Yefes was the eldest of his brothers. Now, not all the Mephoshim agree with that. There are in fact different Mephoshim who parse the Pasuk differently, and they say Achi Yefes Agodo means the elder brother of Yefes. But here the Gemara is understanding, and in fact the Trup back it up, because the word Achi has a tipcha on it, which is a separating Trup. So Achi, the brother of Yefes HaGadol, Yefes the eldest. So we see therefore that Yefes was in fact the eldest, so why then would it be listing So why would it be listing shame first? So as Vidmin Audal says, there's another proof. We don't need to figure it out mathematically. We can actually see from the very words of the pasuk that that Yefes was in fact the eldest son. Fine, but we're still trying to look for a proof that in Doris or Shonim they were able to father children when they were 8 years old. So Elamin Nolan. So where do we get it from after all? So we're gonna do like this. Mehocha, we're gonna learn it as follows. Who was the architect of the Mishkan? With Saul ben Uri ben Hur Mata Yehuda. So we see therefore, so we see the family tree of Bezalel, that he was the son of Uri, who in turn was the son of Hur from Shevet Yehuda. Now, who was Hur? We had him in last week's parasha. We had him in connection with the eagle. So, Vatomas Azuva, Ashes Kolev, it doesn't actually say in the pasuk. The pasuk describes over there how Kolev had a wife named Azuva, and then Azuva passed away. Vayikach le Kolev as Ephros. Then Kolev married Ephros, which is another name for Miriam. Vatela loyas Hur, and she bore to him Hur. The Gemara actually elsewhere explains that Azuva is also a nickname for Miriam, and that Vatomos doesn't mean she actually died. It means that Azuva literally means abandoned, because she was very sickly and nobody wanted to have anything to do with her except for Kalev married her and nursed her back to health, the Gemara explains in Sota. In any case, the point is that that Bchur is the son of Kalev and of Ephros, which is another name for Miriam. Now, v'chi oved Bezalel Mishkan. Now, when Bezalel built the Mishkan, bar kamahavi, how old was he? Bar tleisav. We can show that he was 13 years old when he was the chief architect of the Mishkan. Dichtiv ish memalachta shehema oisim, because the pasuk says each man came from the work that he would do, what he was doing. So we see that he had to have been at least 13 years old. Now, he may have been older, but in other words, at the very minimum, he had to have been 13. Vitanya. Now we learn in a Braisa, Shana Rishana also Moshe Mishkan, during the first year when they were in the desert, is when Moshe made the Mishkan. They went out of Mitzrayim in Nisan of the year 2448. During the year after that, Tishrei 2449 is when Moshe gave them the instructions about building the Mishkan. They put together all the pieces of it, and the Mishkan was set up, and the Mishkan was all ready. Was already in there. They actually finished it Chofei Kislev, and then Hashem told them to wait till the end of Adar to start dedicating it. So the first year Moshe made the Mishkan, Shnia, in the second year, Haken Mishkan, he set up the Mishkan. Then for the first time, they set up the Mishkan permanently on Aleph Nissan, the beginning of the second year, which is Mitzrayim, B'shilach Meraglim, and also the Meraglim was sent in that year. The Meraglim was sent on Chof Tes Sivan of that same year, 2449. Now, how old was Kolev at the time? Uchtiv, years later, Kolev is talking to Yeshua. He says, "Ben aboim shana anoichi b'shloach Moshe eved Hashem v'gomer." I was 40 years old when Moshe sent me as one of the meraglim. Va'ata hine anoichi ayem in chomosh shmonim shana. And he says, now I'm 85 years old, which the Gemara elsewhere learns from this, that because there were 38 more years in the desert, and then it took them 7 years to conquer Eretz Yisrael, and it's at that point when they'd finished conquering most of Eretz Yisrael that Kolev comes to Yeshua and reminds him of the promise that Hashem said he's going to give him the city of Hebron. So in fact, Marsha points out that's not really necessary for all Gemara. There are other Gemaras where that point is relevant about that he's 85, and we learn from that the fact that there were 7 years, that they spent 7 years conquering Eretz Yisrael. In any case, the point is that we see that Kolev was 40 when he was sent as the Meragel. Kamahavilahu Aboin. So we see he was 40 years old at that time. Dal Arbeso to have a Bezalel. By that point, Bezalel is 14 because of the previous year, Bezalel had been the architect of the Mishkan. So by now already he's 14 years old. Poshalu Estrim Bashis. So that leaves 26 years, keeping in mind that Kolev again is Bezalel's great grandfather, because we're saying Kolev's son was Hur, and Hur's son was Uri, and Uri's son was Bezalel. Dal Tartishnid Tlosi Buri. Again, you have to subtract 2 years to cover the three pregnancies, like we discussed before. So it comes out that each one of them fathered his child when he was 8. So therefore, that's a solid proof. There we can't say it's different between men and women, like we said before, with Achitofel or anything like that. And then we can't say it's Derech Chochmason. So therefore, it's clear that it really was like that. And therefore, Bistrama uses that as a precedent to say that even in later generations, the Bia of an 8-year-old boy would be considered a Bia. Whereas again, Bishillel disagrees and says, fine, that was all very nice in Doris and Hashonim, but in later generations, it's not like that. And therefore, only the Bia of a 9-year-old would be considered a Bia and would passel his mother and so forth, like we said before. Okay. Might as well take one more minute to learn till the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, "Dein v'loy bas," that only a boy is a, can be judged and punished as a ben sora remota, but not a girl. Tanya, Reb Shimon Omer, Tanya Omer Reb Shimon. We learn in a brisa that Reb Shimon says, "Bedin hushtei bas ruuyolis ke ben sora remota." By rights, logically, a daughter should also be able to be like a ben sora remota. Because people are going to be involved with her in Aveira. In other words, what the whole point is we're going to learn tomorrow, Bas Hashem, that Ben Sora Remora is eating and drinking in a very gluttonous way. And if a girl is doing that, isn't it much more likely that people are going to come and then get involved with her and they're going to be Mezana together? So by rights, you should say the same way as a boy is going to end up being a no good Nick because of this and end up stealing and so forth. You would think the same logic should apply to a girl. El Xeris HaKosev Bein V'Lo Bas, but it is Xeris HaKosev that it applies only to a boy and not to a girl. So that's how it is, even though logic would have told us otherwise. One interesting point about it, one interesting point about it, Ben Yehoyada makes a point. He says that the deeper idea behind it is that we Jewish people are called Hashem's son. The other nations are called Hashem's daughter. So he brings from the Kli Yakar this point that the Ben Sora Remora, well, why does the Torah tell us when the Gemara is going to point out later on there never was and never will be a Ben Sora Remora? Is it teaches us a lesson? It teaches us a lesson that the Yetzer Hara is telling you do whatever you want, don't worry, you're bonim atam Hashem alekeichem, and we tell him, look, you have a case of a Ben Sora Remora where we see that a father punishes his own son and has him executed. So therefore, so realize that. So now, therefore, that keeps the Yetzer Hara at bay. So now you're going to say then. So now you're going to say though, on the other hand. And continues Ben Yehoyada, the Jewish people are considered Ben. The Umos Ha'olam are considered Bas. He brings from an Alshich that says this point. So therefore, the whole concept applies only to a Ben Sora Murder because it's only for the sake of us Jewish people that we should take that Musa from that. It's not addressed to the Goyim in the first place, and therefore, symbolically, because of that, it doesn't apply to a girl in the first place.